Welcome everyone to Simply Bitcoin. We break down the news from Twitter, the daily fail, meme review, software releases, hardware releases, and the websites by plebs. Joining us today, fellow Bitcoiner and host of the FU Money podcast, we've got Hugo Ramos joining us. But right now, we're going to the numbers. Let's do it.
Number time!
Number Time is brought to you by Bitcoin 2022. It's going to be the largest Bitcoin conference ever. Take advantage of the link down below for 10% off your tickets to Bitcoin 2022.
At the time of this recording, the block height is 709,294. The Bitcoin price, 65,180. Chain rewrite day, 763. Total public Lightning capacity, another new all-time high, 3,214.27. Moscow time, 1534. And blocks to the halving, 130,706.
Very cool, man. You know, just we took a little bit of a tumble. People were speculating that the pump was caused by the inflation report, and then I don't know why the tumble happened. But I know that Hugo does a little bit of TA, so Hugo, drop us some hopium. Inject some hopium into the Simply Bitcoin pleb viewers.
Actually, it was really, really funny because I was shopping at the supermarket, some groceries, when I saw the release of the numbers of the inflation, 6.2%. Well, according to the official CPI, of course, everyone knows this is like 10-15% in reality. So as soon as the inflation numbers came out, I was actually looking at my phone and I saw the price of Bitcoin spiking like crazy to the upside. And I also checked gold and I saw, well, this is actually, gold was also spiking to the upside, and I realized, oh man, this inflation is crazy and people are just trying to hedge against this inflation. So gold bugs were buying gold like crazy, and of course Bitcoiners like us were buying Bitcoin. Unfortunately, the same day, and I wonder if this was a coincidence, unfortunately in the same day, just 1 hour, 2 hours later, the news about Evergrande bankruptcy or something like that came out, and that affected the market again. So it sent it back down exactly to the same point where we were. So this was like crazy. I was recording a video by then. Just I came running home and I was recording a video because of the inflation numbers and Bitcoin again having a new all-time high. And as soon as I finished my video, then it started to go down again because of Evergrande. So it was really crazy, man.
Welcome to the Bitcoin roller coaster. And man, it's nice. Exactly. It's nice to have a TA guy, a TA Bitcoin guy every once in a while, Phil. Look at all that knowledge that he dropped on us. Super grateful for that. But anyways, I wanted to show a little bit more numbers. Check this out. It's not the numbers that you guys are used to seeing. It's some more Glassnode statistics. Check this out. Again, you know, Steve Hanke made this huge ruckus about the wealth distribution in Bitcoin, right? But there's some really, really interesting stats here that don't lie. So check this out, right? The number of Bitcoin balances with over 10,000 Bitcoin is actually on the way down, right? And if you compare that with addresses with 0.01, that is actually on a parabola going up, right? And if you compare that with addresses with 0.1, it's also a parabola going up. But as you start to get a little bit higher, you start to see it starts to taper off. And right here, 10 Bitcoin or more, it's flatlined. 100 Bitcoin or more, it's going down. 1K Bitcoin or more, again, pretty steady. And then 10K addresses, the super whales, it's actually gone down. So again, this, you know, this narrative of the rich get richer, right? I think that that Hanky the Panky was trying to paint, that's just not true. It's actually getting more distributed. Why? Because the early buyers of Bitcoin are starting to sell some of that Bitcoin you know, to you know, fund a little bit of their lifestyle. And then the newcomers are trying to accumulate as much Bitcoin as possible, right? So it's actually, instead of the fiat system, right, which causes this whole quintillion effect where the rich get richer and then the poor get poorer because they're the ones holding the dirty fiat, the cash that's being debased by the state and being redistributed to the state and the elite. In Bitcoin, it's different. Over time, the addresses with more Bitcoin start to sell some of that Bitcoin, and the addresses with very little Bitcoin are actually trying to accumulate as much Bitcoin as possible. Very interesting. And we actually have receipts, you know, to back up our thesis, unlike Steve Hanke the Panky. Phil?
You know, what's interesting, it's interesting that we're talking about this, because I had thought about this a couple of years ago, and I remember tweeting this out, and it made me realize, so look, right, you've got all these people that came to Bitcoin very early on. Now, these people, the ones that held and really, you know, in terms of fiat terms, their value, their ability to possess other assets, like, grew exponentially, right? And so a lot of these OGs, right, they started Bitcoin businesses, and they started building the Bitcoin ecosystem with that money, you know, like, not all of it, right, because they still hold Bitcoin and they still believe in Bitcoin, but they were able to sell some of it, right, to help build out the ecosystem. And I think that that's perfectly natural. And essentially, newcomers like, you know, like us at the time, right, in 2016, 2017, you know, we came in, started to learn about Bitcoin, started to accumulate Bitcoin. And it right away made sense to me that it's a virtuous cycle in that way. So I think that that's a great thing. You know, like, I don't see anything wrong with it. So that's why I think it's difficult when you get into these, you know, these people that tell you, like, oh, you know, you should never spend any Bitcoin. Like, no, okay, you should not spend it frivolously. But, you know, for the people that built out the ecosystem, I think it's a good thing that they, you know, that they helped, that they spent their Bitcoin, right?
Or even like the case, and Surfer Jim makes such a good point, where he essentially makes the point that, look, like, I know that after a certain age, and he's in his 50s, after a certain age, you know, I just start spending my Bitcoin, right? Because, again, like, like, human beings, you know, we're mortal, right? You know, we live a certain amount of time. When you get to a certain age, you go from accumulation to retirement, essentially, mm-hmm. right? And through that retirement spending, right, you're redistributing that Bitcoin. But that redistribution isn't by a giant bureaucracy. It isn't by the state. It's just by you purchasing goods and services, right? And then that Bitcoin gets redistributed, right? It's very interesting. Yeah.
And I just want to quickly add, but also think of this, right? Because of Bitcoin's ability to absorb value at the rate that it does, you really have to only sell less and less of your Bitcoin the longer and longer that you wait. So again, the low time preference plays into this.
Exactly. So yeah. Hugo, you want to tie it up? Any thoughts?
Man, I completely agree with that, except there's only one thing. It came to mind. I saw this interview with Michael Saylor, and he said that you never sell your Bitcoin. There are only two reasons why you would sell your Bitcoin, in his opinion, of course. And this is not even retirement. So he said that only if it's a case of life or death of one of your kids or anyone on your family, or if someone is really sick and you need the money to, you know, to get people well and take them to hospital and pay for all those medical bills and stuff like that. So that's the only reason to sell Bitcoin. I guess he does not even consider the retirement plan as a redistribution of his Bitcoin. But anyway,
so add to, you know, what Saylor, because I am familiar with that interview. Essentially, the case that he was making, and he actually retweeted Coinbase when they started offering, you know, Bitcoin collateralized loans, is essentially to get a loan from a company like Unchained Capital or BlockFi, where you don't have to sell your Bitcoin, right? Exactly. You give it over as collateral, right? And then they give you a lump sum of cash. And then hopefully the value of Bitcoin rises, right? And that lump sum of cash that you owe, you know, becomes a less and less of a deal because Bitcoin's value goes up. However, there is custodial risk there, right? So you're not completely sovereign because you are relying on a third party, right? So I think there is risks for, you know, nothing's perfect. There's pros and cons to everything. But I think, Hugo, you made an excellent point. Anyways, Phil, it's time for
the Daily Fail. The Daily Fail is brought to you by Amber App. Check them out, amber.app. It's Bitcoin made easy. It's the easiest way to invest in Bitcoin. Check out the link down below. Yellow, we've got Hugo here. What do you have to tell him?
Amber, the smart way to stack sats.
This is not the major part of our fail, okay? The major part of our fail is serial shitcoiner and just all-around terrible take-haver Justin Bonds. But before we get into that, this is a follow-up to Nico's news yesterday with Dave Troy, right? You saw how, like, in-depth, right, Nico went through his arguments, dismantled them, right? How terrible Bitcoin is. It's terrible. It's destroying the system. Well, it turns out the internet, as we all know, doesn't forget anything. And Bitcoiners, unfortunately for a lot of these people, we know how to use search. And we've got patience because we have low time preference. So the Bitcoiners dug up some old stuff from 2014. All right, here's a good one from Bitcoin Tina, okay, which shout out obviously to Sai. Okay, so here we go. This is from Dave Troy, okay? Now, if we just scroll up here, you can see that this person here is talking to him about Litecoin, okay? So Dave Troy is obviously understanding very much about crypto. Anyways, so here he goes. He's talking in response to Litecoin mining, okay? Anyways, he goes, it requires a lot of RAM, so you can't get advantage by building ASIC hardware, as we have seen with Bitcoin. Okay, so this is 2014, and he's talking about how terrible cryptocurrencies are. Now, check this out from Jameson Lopp, okay? You never know what you're going to find when you look through the posting history of the Bitcoin hater du jour, and oh, is Jameson right. Take a look at this. This is Dave Troy shilling Coinbase. Look at that. In 2013, don't get me wrong, these sour, I don't even know if he's a no-coiner, but just these sour people that missed Bitcoin because they didn't pay enough attention, they come back and they sound so stupid.
You move on, could you click on his profile?
Oh yeah, sure.
Just click on his profile.
Have you seen his tweet about his wife's boyfriend?
Click his picture.
Why am I doing this, Nico? Why are you making me do this?
Look into his eyes, Phil. That's why.
I don't want to.
Just look into his eyes.
I don't want to. I have a hard enough time believing that he went and poisoned people's minds at TED Talks.
I feel like he's doing something to me when in that smile.
Look, somebody tried to teach him charisma, but he learned something completely different. Okay? It's not charisma. Anyways, okay.
Man, I stumbled upon this guy on Twitter just a few days ago, and the first tweet I saw by this guy, this Dave Troy, was something like this. I can't remember exactly, but it was something like this. My wife's boyfriend bought Bitcoin. Since then, I hate it.
Wait.
And I thought this was a joke. This was something like a joke. And now I understand a few days later that this guy is actually a no-coiner or a shitcoiner or whatever.
He's just
a hater of Bitcoin.
Hold on. You have to send me that. You have to send me that, Hugo.
It's on his Twitter profile. It's just a few days ago. So
We'll look for it. We'll look for it.
Yeah, okay. Look for it. If he didn't delete it, I can also try to search it after the show and send it to you.
Please, 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 because we like to provide sources for everyone. We always show the receipts.
This tweet was completely crazy.
Dude, that's oh nuts. God. That's nuts. Hopefully we could pop it up. And anyways, Phil, what's the next fail?
Okay, so check this out. This is just another, this is a small one. Okay, we're just leading into the actual story, but this is, I totally forget who posted this site. Shout out to you, bitcoinisdead.lol. A lot of people have been wrong about Bitcoin, but how wrong? So you click on the little how wrong, and here we go. Okay, here comes a quote. Bitcoin is a bubble. Ray Dalio, man who predicted bubbles nine out of one times. Anyways, how wrong was Ray? Here you go. the price of Bitcoin after Ray Dalio said it would die. Ray was precisely 1,564% wrong. Anyways, great site. It's going to be in the show.
Click the next one, Phil.
Click the next. Okay. Okay. Who else effed up? Let's see. I can break Bitcoin on command. Alistair Macklin, anonymous weirdo. How wrong was Alistair? Let's find out.
Hey.
Oh my
one
God.
More, one more, do one more, okay. Do one more.
So you can see he was 26,000% wrong. Okay, okay. Okay, one more. Then we go to the actual fail. Okay. Thinking of buying Bitcoin instead of precious metals? Think again. Peter Schiff. Is that not totally synchronicity? That was destiny,
okay. Phil. That was
destiny. How wrong was Peter? That was destiny. Good call. Okay, here we go. How wrong was Peter? Oh, wow. Peter was 9,225% wrong.
No wonder his son was just dunking on him the other day.
Imagine taking him seriously when he's standing there talking to you about his investments and stuff. You're like, okay, Peter.
Oh, man.
You're like, come on, you've been dead wrong about Bitcoin, commenting about it every day for a decade. You're terrible.
He grows older as the price of Bitcoin goes up.
Yeah.
He ages faster. Okay. Anyways, Phil, what's the fail? What's the fail?
Okay, let's
I'm
get
sorry,
serious.
That was a good sidetrack. That was awesome.
let's get serious here for a second, okay? Bitcoin, you know, Bitcoin has some concerns, and Justin Bonds, serial shitcoiner, is here to help us figure out that other shitcoins are better. Anyways, for the people who don't know who Justin is, all right, he's the founder and CIO of at Cyber Capital, full-time shitcoin researcher since 2014. Okay, so you know we're talking business. So look, if you've been in the space for a while, you know who this guy is. You know his takes are terrible. And if you don't think his takes are terrible, then you're most likely a shitcoiner and you just don't understand Bitcoin, which, okay, that's perfectly fine. Eventually you will. Hopefully sooner than later. But this guy is out there making these terrible, terrible tweets, and we just had to have some fun with them because he definitely, definitely got his ass handed to him in this thread. And we're going to dive into how he got his ass handed to him. Okay. We're not going to go through the whole thing. You could see that I highlighted some pieces. Let's dive in. What can BTC do that ETH cannot? Right? Then obviously he thinks nothing. He thinks ETH is amazing. And mind you, he's been a daily fail in the past. We showed his older tweets. Like, we did a whole entire spread of all the older tweets. He was a Bcasher first, and then he moved over to ETH, and now ETH is the greatest thing. But before, Bcash was gonna, you know, make you, you know, make the world's ills all better. Anyways, so here we go. We got a response from Ouroboros. Okay, Bitcoin can't be shut down. ETH does so much better. Oh, he's right about that. It does do so much better. It can be shut down with a warrant and a few phone calls.
Let me explain why. Let me give people context, okay?
Sure.
Why? Why is that possible, okay?
Well,
Ethereum has a head to chop off, right? There's Ethereum Foundation. You arrest Vitalik. You arrest those people. Development of ETH stops. Now, let's talk about where the actual Ethereum network actually runs on. Because it's so resource intensive to run a node, unlike the Bitcoin network, this is what the fork wars were all about. The Ethereum nodes are highly centralized in giant server data centers, specifically Amazon web servers. It's estimated that 40 to 60% of Ethereum nodes, because they're so resource intensive, are hosted on Amazon web servers. Do you remember what happened to Parler, the social media app? And Parler disappeared. That same thing could be done to Ethereum with exactly what this guy was saying, with a warrant and a few phone calls. Anyways, I'm sorry, Phil.
Oh yeah, no, don't worry. We're gonna dive into that head you can cut off. That's coming up in the article. So ETH is decentralized cryptocurrency, whether you like it or not. It is factually and objectively permissionless, public, and distributed. See, Justin is a great scammer because Justin puts together words elegantly. He is a very good tweeter, okay? It makes it sound like he knows what he's talking about. He's got no freaking clue, okay? He's completely clueless, and he's completely full of shit. Anyways. So, at Hiya Dragon responded with this. Distributed, in quotes. What are we talking about? What is he talking about? Let's dive in. This is November 11th, by the way, so today. Crucial Ethereum service Infura suffers a major outage. Infura, Ethereum's infrastructure provider. That sounds, Nico, what you were talking about before with the cutting off the single head. That sounds like centralization. Anyways, I know, we're just, you know what it is? I'm being closed-minded and we're just being toxic. So I'm sure that there's multiple of this single provider and we're just missing the point here. Anyways, so it's currently experiencing a service outage and has impacted many companies that use the service. Infura runs Ethereum nodes on behalf of projects and companies in the Ethereum ecosystem. Oh my God, are you saying that these nodes are hosted from a central provider? No. And yesterday we showed the tide of the World Economic Forum. We're just closed-minded and toxic morons. Anyways, okay, here we go. Without it, these projects are unable to see what's happening on the Ethereum blockchain. Well, tell you what's happening on the blockchain. Nothing. Anyways, these issues with Ethereum have caused several shitcoin exchanges, including Binance, to suspend the withdrawal of Ethereum and ERC-20 tokens. Wait a second, did you just get frozen? Did you just get banned from your money? Wait a second, Nico, didn't we show a website that they have an ultrasound money website with the pretty graphic and the face and the wizards and no?
Phil, all I gotta say is that we're two for two. We called the BSV 51% attack, and we fucking nailed this. We've been saying this 6 months ago, bro.
It's about to get a whole lot sweeter because you're like, I'm telling you, like, your mind's about to melt, okay? Because I had to reread it like three times. I thought I was reading typos, and then I thought I was just having a stroke, okay? So here we go. We've brought additional capacity online for the affected components and are continuing to triage the root cause of the outage. This isn't even the worst part. System recovery operations are in progress. Now, look, I work for a giant tech corporation. I personally have seen these types of emails and this types of writing, okay? Let me tell you about triaging the root cause of the outage. That means we have no freaking idea what the hell has caused this. We have no idea how to fix this. We're digging through logs. We might figure something out. For real, okay? But they're going to make it sound way more intelligent than that. They're going to dive into the nuance. It's the nuance. Anyways, all right, I continue. Here we go. It also says the on-call team is investigating and working to restore service functionality. Well, good for them. Anyways, we do not rely entirely on one provider. We are still up with no issues, just that we are now working with, let's say, 50% forth. But yeah, Infura is dead. Ian Kane, head of communications at Dapp Radar, told Decrypt. Dapper added that Dapp Radar may experience some delays, but that data processing remains intact. Now look, I couldn't highlight this, okay? But I have to read this to you because this is nuts. Okay?
I'll put an arrow.
Nikita Zvorenkov, Ethereum lead developer, the blockchain split into two versions, one longer than the other. I think there was some change in the code. This is the lead developer. I think there was some change in the code several months ago that led to a split today. I had to reread that a few times. I'm like, what? So they're chain split on top of that? So they lost Infura and they're okay. Anyways, let's keep going. Zvorenkov told Decrypt, adding that he hopes developers will tell exactly what has led to this. But anyways, that can be classified as a hard forking change. Zvorenkov, or I'm totally killing his name, I apologize, also suggested that this impacted Geth nodes that were left without an upgrade. Those who haven't been upgrading their Geth nodes for a while, I presume several months at least, got split from those with new Geth versions, he said. This is parading around as ultrasound money, Nico. I don't even know what to tell you. What just happened?
Dude. Okay. First of all, we fucking told you so. Okay. That's number one. Number two, this is the giant dumpster fire that is Ethereum. It's a giant dumpster fire that poses itself as decentralized. That's why Klaus Schwab is all, you know, is all into it, because it could be coerced. And this is why the fork wars were so important, and why winning the fork wars was so important, and keeping the Bitcoin block size at the size that it needed to be. And that was purposely done so the hardware required to run a Bitcoin node wasn't so expensive, but more people could run it, right? So Bitcoin has fairer distribution because the cost to run a Bitcoin node is so cheap, right? I think it's like you could literally build one Raspberry Pi, $200, $250, boom, you have a Bitcoin node. And you compare that with Ethereum's nodes. I think Lop, which is a computer whiz, he's the CTO of Casa, you know, I remember reading a tweet. I probably won't be able to find it, but it says it took him literally more than a week or something to, like, you know, try to run it, and then it crashed and all this stuff. And it looks like most of these Ethereum nodes could only be run in heavily, you know, heavy resource, hardware expensive server farms, man, which causes centralization. And with centralization, again, man, the government could shut it down. You know, these types of things happen, an outage. What you were reading to me, Phil, that article, it sounded like, you know, when I go to Comcast because my internet goes down. That's literally what it sounded like, you know? But this is supposed to be the future of money. You know, the future of money could just go down. Bitcoin doesn't go down. In fact, China banned Bitcoin mining. And if we didn't tell you about it, you probably wouldn't have noticed.
Nope.
That's anti-fragile. Ethereum is like, it's a fucking dumpster fire. I don't know what else to say. And we brought the receipts. Hugo, I'm going to shut up. I'm very passionate about this.
Allow me to say, to tell you guys just a really short story. So I started in Bitcoin. I started to hear Bitcoin around 2015, 16, and because of two documentaries, the End of Money as We Know It and Banking on Bitcoin. And one was from 2015, the other one 2016. And then I finally, after understanding what's going on with Bitcoin, I finally bought it in 2017, and I started I quit my job and I started to go 100% full time. Bitcoin. But when I was young and stupid in 2017, I also started to mine Ethereum. So I had this mining operation, which is now sold and gone forever. But, and because I'm saying this because Phil was talking about decentralization of Ethereum and stuff like that. So I know Ethereum very well because I was a miner. I was a miner for 5 years and I got rid of it, and I sold all the operation of mining. But now I finally am contributing to the decentralization of Bitcoin, because just yesterday I got my miner from Bitmain from China. So I sold everything I had, mining Ethereum and the Ethereum nodes, and actually my full node of Bitcoin, not the mining one, but the full node I'm running here, cost me zero, not even $200 for a Raspberry Pi, because I have a server at home. And I'm running it on a virtual machine on that server. So it costs zero. And the Ethereum full node, you cannot not even run it because it requires like 3 terabytes of hard drive at least. And it's increasing at a pace like crazy. And you have to buy drives all the time. That's why they have to put it on Amazon. So actually 70%, I have the statistics here. I can also send it to you guys. 70% of Ethereum nodes run on hosting services. And from those 70%, around 35 run on Amazon alone. So this is public. This is on Ethernodes. You can check the website. It's there. They have all the graphs and all the stuff there. So 70% is centralized in hosting services. If someone presses the button, it's gone. It's like the it's like the South Park, and it's gone.
It's gone. And if exactly. We couldn't copyright, we would put that in there, but unfortunately we can't. But yeah, I know you guys know. Anyways, Phil, I think we should change the name of the show and change up some of the sponsors. Check this out. Here's my pitch, Phil. Simply Ethereum, sponsored by Amazon Web Services.
Oh my God. That is amazing.
Is that an April Fool's after Simply Fiat? Oh my god, thank you, Hugo.
And you can't give it away. You can't tell them that we're doing that.
They'll forget, bro. They'll forget. We'll have that one guy. They'll have that one guy on Twitter. It's like, I know what you guys are doing tomorrow. But anyways, Hugo, dude, thank you so much for your perspective.
That's amazing.
That's crazy, dude. We learn something new every day.
Thank you for having me, and I really enjoy your show, man. I always watch it every day.
Man, we love your show too, man. We had such a good time being there. That's why we invited you. But anyways, Phil, it's time for the Daily Meme Review. The Daily Meme Review is brought to you by Citadel 21. Get yourself a physical copy. There's only 1,000 made. Check out how beautiful the artwork is. It's Bitcoin news by plebs for plebs. Really cool stories, articles. Check it out, citadel21.com. All right, everybody. The first meme is brought to us by OXTail1. Definitely a plebe. When you're up 327% this year, but inflation is 6.2%. Huh? That's how I feel. It's one of those memes where you laugh inside. Next one is Phil's a tough audience today. Anyways, you either understand history or trust the government. You can't do both. Very good by Clancy. Like that one. Okay, next one is brought to us by Susie BDDS. And anyways, dentist, I'm sorry, but this may hurt. Okay, give it to me. You don't own enough Bitcoin. If my dentist told me that, I would cry. You know, I would start crying. Like, I'm not even ashamed of it. Next one is LC HODL, the fiat standard. Is that all you need? Big TV, more stuff, new car, new clothes, exotic holidays, and the Bitcoin standard. And he has a passport in his hand with all his Bitcoin, I'm assuming. It says yes. And that's so true, man. Bitcoiners are just, you know, like, look, the higher Bitcoin goes, the more I look like a homeless man. You know, just because... Fuck you, money, I guess. I don't know, Phil. Sovereignty? Like, why do you need things? I would rather have Bitcoin than nice things. You know? Like, the people that buy the Lambos, that's stupid. You can have more Bitcoin and not the Lambos. You could rent a Lambo if you want, but imagine selling Bitcoin for a Lamborghini. That is the most stupid thing you could freaking do. Just saying. Anyways, I would always rather have more Bitcoin. But, Phil, for those memes, okay, is there a spoon? Or maybe there is no spoon. Phil?
I'm totally left speechless because those are great memes, but it's the weirdest thing how we're in sync and we don't even discuss this stuff because what I brought today as my score, okay, is, get ready for this. Your spoon is one half of the equation. My bowl is the other half.
That's right.
Spoon, the bowl. We're having super cereal. Who knows?
Bro, we could have cereal with the scores, man. That makes me
People
so
are
happy.
Having breakfasts. That's it.
And okay. Anyways, Hugo, what would you give? I'm turning red. Hugo, what would you give those memes?
Oh man, wait for it.
Such a kid.
How does he have a Satoshi? Oh.
This is my featherless Elon chicken.
Elon chicken Musk. Nice. Yeah. Chicken Musk.
This is my Elon the chicken.
Elon the chicken. Dude, it's a Bitcoin chicken army. It's a chicken army that are Bitcoiners. We got Satoshi the Bitcoin chicken. I think Max Kaiser has Clucky. And we got Elon, the Bitcoin chicken. We got so many chickens. Awesome. Anyways, guys, do you agree with our scores? Do you disagree? Let us know down in the comment section. And of course, join our Telegram group. Link us a Bitcoin memes review. Anyways, Phil, it's time for the daily news. Brought to you by CryptoCloaks.com. They sell the best 3D printed Bitcoin merch, like the 3D printed Bitcoin grenade art, and take advantage of the link down below for 10% off anything on the store, CryptoCloaks.com. Another Simply Bitcoin We Told You So moment. We've been saying that there needs to be a migration from a Bitcoin, the Bitcoin denominator, to a SAT denominator, because the unit bias is very, very strong when it comes to buying Bitcoin. So if you're a new coiner, if you're a no coiner and you're getting into the space, you're like, oh, I can have 1,000 XRP, right? Or, you know, or the 13,000 other shit coins versus having 0.000 something Bitcoin, right? But they don't understand, and I think the mainstream media, Coinbase, and all the shitcoin exchanges also do a horrible job. They're not equal, right? Ethereum and Bitcoin are not. One is decentralized. One is freedom money. One is unconfiscatable. One is uncensorable, right? And the other one could be shut down by Jeff Bezos himself, right? So XRP, it's the same centralized garbage, right? And all the shitcoins, they're centralized. Bitcoin is not. It's decentralized, right? Because of that, migrating to a SAT standard convinces it's easier. It feels much better. And I see this because I pay my sister in Bitcoin to help us with our videos. And I see it, right? If she receives the sats, all of a sudden she's like, wow, I'm receiving, I'm just throwing random numbers out there, 1 million sats, 100 sats, 500,000 sats. Like, that feels good. You feel like you have a lot of something, right? Mm-hmm. And again, you will have, we can't, you know, guarantee anything. Nothing's guaranteed in life, but I'm pretty freaking sure, and I know Hugo and Phil feels the same, that eventually we'll reach dollar sat parity, okay? And having that 1 million sats or having that 500,000 sats is gonna feel good, right? So anyways, this is so important. Strike is following the example of Cash App, right? And we also had Corey Clipson on the show a couple days ago, and he was discussing about adding sats to the Swan app potentially in the future. But anyways, this is very important, and this is exactly what Strike's doing. They just announced this today, right? So now you could buy Bitcoin in Satoshis. And in some of my wallets, like in my Blue wallet and whatever, you know, a wallet that I have on my cell phone and stuff like that, I actually denominate in sats. And it's a lot easier, actually, you know? One Bitcoin is 100 million sats. You know, if you start using it, it gets easier. Next announcement I wanted to make before I get into the news. Taproot activates in 2 days. Woohoo! When it does activate, we'll do a whole episode of what is Taproot, why it's important, and why you guys should care. Again, if you're a user of Bitcoin, you might miss it, right? But it does add a lot of privacy-focused features, really cool stuff. But anyways, the story today, and we brought Hugo because we've been talking about this, but we're going to keep talking about this because this is another Simply Bitcoin We Told You So moment. How is it, right, that two, forgive me, Phil, idiots on the internet that make YouTube videos were more on point about the reality of inflation than the mainstream media, right? This doesn't come as a surprise to Bitcoiners, right? But this is starting to get into a territory where the mainstream media or the government could no longer cover it. And that's exactly what's happening, right? So this was a, you know, New York Times big publication, right? It says now they're starting to, you know, to notice as well. And this is definitely putting pressure on the Fed, on Biden. Let's see what type of excuses they come up with. We talk about Clown World on the show a lot. I'll let you guys be the judge whether this is Clown World. Check this out. The White House says its plans will slow inflation. The big question is when, right? So what is these plans that will slow inflation? You know, because they could raise interest rates and they could stop printing money. That would definitely help. But no. It's not that. The Biden administration has argued that its infrastructure and broader economic package will slow rapid increases. You heard that right. Rocketing inflation has become a headache for U.S. consumers, and President Biden has a go-to prescription. He says a key way to help relieve increasing prices is to pass a $1.85 trillion collection of spending programs and tax cuts that is currently languishing in the Senate. So, what the Clown World is trying to say, if we print more money and spend more money that we don't have, that will reduce inflation. These people are and off the rocker. Anyways, a wide range of economists agree with the president, but only in part. Only in part, Phil. They generally accept his argument that in the long run, the bill and his infrastructure plan could make businesses and their workers more productive. It doesn't mention anything about inflation, which would help to ease inflation as more goods and services are produced across the economy. So by spending more money, hopefully that will make people more productive, and that will... does this make sense to you? This is crazy. This is absolutely insane. And here's the thing.
We are the idiots that elect these morons.
And Kaiser has been on point about this, and the theory that he is essentially saying on the Kaiser Report is that the excuses are going to get more and more and more and more extreme as they could no longer hide the inflation. We've been covering it. First, there was no inflation. Then the inflation is transitory. Then it was frustrating inflation. Then inflation is actually a good thing. Then it's, inflation is a good thing for economic growth, and it's only going to happen to next year. They're running out of excuses, which is why these types of articles sound so ridiculous. This is from the New York Times. That's how insane it is. Anyways, but many researchers, including a forecasting firm that Mr. Biden often cites to support the economic benefits of a proposal, says the bill is structured in a way that could add to inflation next year before prices have time to cool off. Okay, so inflation soon, more inflation, but apparently, like they were saying last year, that will cool it off. Anyways, it's ridiculous. Some economists and lawmakers worry about the timing, arguing that the risk of fueling more inflation when it has reached record highs outweighs the potential benefits of passing a big spending bill that could help to keep prices in check while addressing other social growth. Prices have picked up by 6.2% over the past year, the fastest pace in 31 years and far above the Federal Reserve's inflation target. And it's funny because these central bankers have been saying, it's only 2%. It's only 2%. I love the source material. You know, that's all I have to say. And since the corporate media can't tell you the truth because their hands are tied, you know, we feel privileged to be the ones that tell you the truth and show you how ridiculous these coping mechanisms / propaganda is getting. This is clown world times 100. Phil?
I just threw up inside my stomach. I don't even know if that's if that's possible, but that's what just happened. So I think that the best way to describe this is snafu, right? Situation normal, all effed up, right? Like, this is insane. Like, we are totally living in, like, this is pure clown world. I don't even know what to say anymore. I mean, they put this stuff out, and the scary part is that because all of the media outlets and everything is owned by the same corporations indirectly or whatever it is, they spew this garbage out, and then they treat it like it's normal. So it becomes normalized, and people read this crap, and they think to themselves, I don't understand it, but then they think, it's just me. Somebody that's, you know, doing this for a long time, an economist or something like that, they understand this, so, you know, this makes sense, this must be right. Like, a lot of people are just too afraid to admit that none of this makes sense, and the truth is that it doesn't. It doesn't make any sense. I have no idea what you just read through. All I understand is that they're going to print more. That's all I've understood. I've understood that inflation can somehow be taken away by doing the very act that causes, one of the very acts anyways, that causes inflation. So I don't understand how anyone is believing this. And the scary part is that we elect these people, right? Like, these people are elected and somebody's paying this. And there's a whole bunch of people bobbing their heads saying, this is a good idea.
Dude.
That's scary shit, man. That's all that is. It's scary shit.
Man, it's they've just been doing it for so long. Anyways, Hugo, what are your thoughts?
Man, this is so absurd that I've been thinking about this. I've been thinking that we, you know, the podcasters, the Bitcoin maximalists, and everyone that has an audience, we should stop talking about it. I mean, we should keep it a secret. Let them print more, because that's actually what Bitcoin needs. Let them print more and implode the Fed and all the fiat money. So we should actually stop talking about it and just support the policy of this, you know, the president, the current president and the party, and allow them to print like 6 or 10 or 15 trillion. Print 15 trillion.
That's what we want.
Mm-hmm. Let's help them build the circus tents. Hey, dude, we're going to help you build those tents. He's right, though, to a certain extent.
Here's the thing, though. They're fucked either way.
Yeah, exactly.
They can't do anything. But wait, Phil, there's more. And you know what the funniest part about this, guys, is that I'm forced to subscribe to get behind the paywall of the New York Times, of the Financial Times, so I could access what the mainstream top of the corporate financial press is reporting. And these are the articles they're coming up with. This BS. Okay, so check out this article from Financial Times. More clown world. First of all, look at the name of the article. The end of the bond market bull run. Let me show you the bond market and their yields. And you tell me if it's a bull run. What does that look like to you, Phil?
Oh, wait. No, Nico, you don't see that little dip right there at the bottom there where it kind of goes up? All the way at the bottom. Go all the way to the bottom. You'll see it. See that? Look at that. Hey, there's your bull run.
Okay, so
right at the bottom there.
In 1981, if you bought a government bond, which is the staple point of the world's economy, it's considered the safest thing that you could buy, right? Especially U.S. bonds, right? In 1982, it was 13%. So you're getting 13% return back on your money, right? Today, it's at 1.8%. Remember, though, there's inflation. So if you hold a U.S. government bond, you're actually losing 4% every single year. Now, compare that with the rest of the world. Germany and some other countries, their bonds have actually gone negative. So why the hell would you buy these things before? It's because there was no other alternative to put your money in. Now, especially if you didn't want risk, now there is Bitcoin. So I suspect Bitcoin is going to be a major threat, and it's going to threaten the governments at B, their status quo, their way of doing things, because a lot of the social spending and funding and money that they get from selling these governments. Now they're selling it back to the Fed, you know, but a portion of it at least is bought by the open market, right? But all of a sudden, and Ray Dalio actually touched upon this, bonds are becoming useless. Why would I hold something if it's losing value, right? Especially if there's a better alternative, right? But anyways, before I tie this up, I just want to read this passage from the Financial Times to just point out how ridiculous this is. Anyways, predictions of a reversal in this trend have frequently come to naught. Investors have periodically asked how interest rates could go possibly lower only for rates to plumb new depths. Yet this time, the multi-decade investment trend really finally be coming to an end. Despite a small rally this week, could mark the end of the bond bull market as central banks begin the long, slow tightening cycle, the long-awaited normalization of monetary policy. I want you guys to focus on that, right? Because they're acting as if they could undo what they've created. But unfortunately for them, though, we're simply Bitcoin and we bring receipts. Check this out. This is the Fed balance sheet. This is how they justify the printing of money, okay? So check out these dates, right? This is when they tried to reverse. This is what this article said. The long-awaited normalization of monetary policy. And they're using that vocabulary, right, to make you feel like these bobbleheads still have control of this train that's completely out of control. So check this out, Phil, right? Here's this. Now let's take a look at the stock market, okay? Let's take a look at the stock market. So around March 2020, right, the stock market took a dip. Now let's pull up the Fed asset sheet. March 2020, around here. And look what they did. Then they started printing. And then all of a sudden, what started happening, right, is that the stock market started to make all-time highs, even though, right, we're living through a worldwide pandemic. Small businesses are closing down because of lockdowns, right? So do you believe that they could reverse this? They're acting as if they're in control of something they can't reverse. They're like an addicted heroin addict. They tried to reverse it in the past, as you saw with the Fed balance sheet. It crashed the stock market. And again, they had to continue printing, but printing more than they printed before. And exactly what Kaiser was saying also, you can't stop a Ponzi. This is a Ponzi scheme at this point. That's what this has become, right? But it's crazy that the top of the financial publications are trying to justify it with all these fancy words and all this fancy rhetoric. Phil?
It's exactly what you just said. You know, this is a Ponzi. It is the biggest Ponzi, okay? It is a global Ponzi scheme. And the craziest part is, I find it absolutely hilarious that they think that they can unwind this. They've already tried to unwind this. And let's keep in mind, we've never actually fully recovered from any of the previous bubbles that have occurred. The system has never allowed for any of those those boom and bust cycles to properly bust and form again. Okay? So all that's happened is that it's gotten huge. And they can't do anything about it. You and I both know exactly what's going to happen when they stop buying these bonds in a couple of months. We know exactly the type of stuff that we're going to be reporting. Okay? So they have, the only thing they have left is the money printing, and they can't stop that.
This is
I don't know.
Crack up, boom, bro. There's no more.
Not looking good. So they're going to have to manufacture something. They're going to have to manufacture something. What else are they going to manufacture? This is the only thing, right? Now we can start thinking with the tinfoil hat conspiracies. What gets what can they manufacture in order for this not to play out the way it absolutely should, based on the market dynamics that they've created with this fake money?
The biggest threat to the world right now is a cyber pandemic. Ah! Just a little reference there. I don't know if you guys got it. Some of you will, though. Hugo, what are your thoughts on this?
Man, the people that follow my show know that.
First of all, let me because you're much more number oriented than I am. Correct me if I made any mistakes or any things in my observations with the Fed balance sheet and all that stuff.
Actually, it didn't, and I was exactly going to talk about that. You know, the people that follow my podcast, the FU Money podcast, know that since like 3 months ago, I've been saying that this rise in the S&P 500 since the COVID crash in March 2020 and all this rise of the prices on the S&P 500 is absolutely synthetic. This has nothing to do with organic growth of the companies that are represented in the S&P 500. So I've been saying this for a long time, and as long as they can, or as long as they keep printing money, this will continue to rise, because that's the representation of the pyramid scheme. If they stop printing money, the S&P will collapse, and it will hurt a lot of people. It will hurt a lot of people when that happens. And everyone with really little knowledge about economics knows that the only way to stop inflation is to stop printing money and to raise the interest rates on money. That's the only way to stop inflation. And if they do that, the pyramid scheme collapses. And then the markets will go also down, and it will hurt a lot of people, even not the ones in the markets. And those are the ones that actually, you know, pressure the government and the Fed to continue this pyramid scheme. But I'm talking about the plebs, not even the Bitcoin plebs, everyone. Everyone, especially the middle class and the lower classes, will get hurt if that happens. So that's why they have to keep printing the money, because they don't want, you know, this awful thing to happen. So yep. This is the big picture of what you just showed on that chart.
Absolutely, man. It's you know, and it's unfortunate. And it looks like this fiat experiment that started in 1971. You know, it's not just us saying it. You know, you have Ron Paul, you have, you know, Jack Dorsey, you have a lot, you know, you have Hugo, you have Dr. Jeff Ross that we had on. You know, this might be the end of the fiat experiment as we know it, and it just ends in one giant crack up boom. But anyways, Phil, there was an open source software release today. Why don't you tell everybody about it?
Software releases. Brought to you by CypherSafe.io. Get yourself a Cypher wheel. Check this out. You need to save your seed into this metal device. This thing is fantastic. Anyways, store your letters. Check it out down below. All right, we've got BTC Pay Server version 1.3.4. That's right. You can handle payments, sovereign payments, on your own. The link is down below in the show notes.
Awesome. Thank you, Phil. All right, guys, that was our show. Before we go, I want to give a shout out to our awesome, awesome guests. You can go give them a follow on Twitter, on the Twitter, @_Hugo_Ramos_. And I want you guys to stop what you're doing right now and head on over to his YouTube channel. It's called the FU Money Podcast. Hit that subscribe button. Subscribe right now. Get some more truth, because you're not going to get it from the mainstream media. Anyways, guys, you know what to do. If you enjoyed the show, smash the like button. And of course, if you want to continue hearing the Bitcoin news from the pleb perspective and the catastrophic fails, Joe Biden, Bit Whisper, subscribe to Simply Bitcoin. And we'll see you tomorrow, guys, for another episode.
Clown money, clown world, clown government. Opt out. It's time for Bitcoin. Let's do it. We'll be right back.